It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Last time I did this, where I did 3 hours filling in for Lance and then 2 hours of this show, I broke it up with a palate cleanser. We just started talking about movies for a segment. I don't have anything locked for that, but let's do this. If you missed it last night, maybe you weren't looking to watch Sixers versus Spurs, and then you saw the score line and just said, you know what, I'm not going to watch this game. It was a special night on NBC. It was nostalgia night. They called it throwback night. They got together one of their old crews. It was Bob Costas, Mike Fratello, Doug Collins, and they did the game, Spurs versus Sixers. The Sixers wore their Iverson-era black jerseys. The graphics were a throwback to the 90s on NBC. That's the first thing I noticed when I tuned in. Oh, that looks like 1995. It also looked like 1999 as the Spurs were running through the league during that strike-shortened season as they went on to win the title. The Spurs were dominant last night as they smacked the depleted Sixers around. But let's remember something. We remember Bob Costas introducing the big game on Sunday. This is how NBC kicked off their nostalgia night. For their Tuesday night game.
This is the NBA on NBC. Tonight, the San Antonio Spurs visit the Philadelphia 76ers. It's Coast to Coast Tuesday, presented by Kia.
A cold, rainy night in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. The city where American democracy was born 250 years ago, and hence the name of this city's NBA team, the 76ers, who tonight play host to the San Antonio Spurs. It's game one of NBC's Coast to Coast Tuesday, which tonight is also Throwback Tuesday, as we welcome you to Xfinity Mobile Arena. Hi, everybody. I'm Bob Costas with Coach Doug Collins, four-time All-Star with the 76ers, former NBA Coach of the Year, the guy that Marv dubbed the Czar of the Telestrator, Mike Fratello. So it's Throwback Tuesday. We put the old band back together. We got the band back together at least for one night.
That was their intro. One thing I'll take away from it, 90s graphics suck in HD. They played fine back in the day, but I was like, all this stuff looks terrible. I was fine with it because I remember the 90s and in NBA on NBC. But as far as what it looks like on the big screen now, please, not everything's better. Not everything back then was better. But the game itself was disgusting. The second and third quarters, the Spurs ran away with it. I think Wimby took like 5 shots. That's how dominant they were. They didn't need them. And Embiid was just sitting there. It's kind of, speaking of nostalgia, old stuff and the new stuff. You watch what's old is new in Philly, Embiid not available, and then you watch Wimby with all those young Spurs as they took the Sixers apart. So it was fun watching that game, and couldn't have been fun for the Sixers fans in a couple ways. First of all, they're getting their ass kicked on national television. The other thing is they're not fans of Doug Collins. They don't want Doug Collins calling games. It would be like if Bill O'Brien wound up calling games for the Texans. Like, if the Boston College thing is going the way it's going, what's up, Trevor? As that keeps going the way it's going, where he's eventually not going to have that job anymore, if CBS was like, you know what? Who would be a great personality? on our games, Bill O'Brien. And we got stuck with Bill O'Brien a couple times a year. That's how Sixers fans feel about Doug Collins. He was fine there, but not good enough. So that was fun. Watching the Spurs play like they did, not so much fun. That's a team that is too good too fast. They got everything you might want. Maybe there's a lack of shooting on the perimeter sometimes, but they got big wings that can guard. Even, was it Carter Bryant out of Arizona, the rookie, was given maxi hell. And actually he contested a shot late in the second half. I think it was a buzzer beater on Vijay Edgecombe that knocked him out of the game. He blocked it clean, but he got body, and Vijay Edgecombe landed awkwardly, and he was done for the game. It was right before the half. He took his free throws, and then he was done for it. We'll see what's up with him. But I don't like it, man. Spurs too good too soon. But that's what happens when you're bad for as long as they have, and they got the lottery luck of Wimby, and then turns out Stephon Castle at four was the right pick for them. And they have De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox was in the game, but they were so good for stretches in the second or third that I didn't know he was out there. Like, oh, is De'Aaron Fox playing tonight? And then he popped up, got back in the game, and he was not needed at all. So that's a team the Rockets will have to compete against. They've got a team that brings old memories but is no longer a threat in the Warriors. That game is tomorrow. Jabari Smith is supposed to be back. We played the sound yesterday from Ime Udoka, him discussing, or at least asked a question about, would his starting lineup change? And the answer was a resounding no. It was almost dismissive, like, no. I mean, the guys are the guys. So I think for people who were hoping for Reed Shepard's last five or six games to be a revealing moment for Ime, that he was wrong about his decision, I think you got an answer to that yesterday. Reed Shepard's going to play plenty. It's just not to the point where he's going to be cemented as a starter or even a guy who's getting 35 minutes a night. He'll probably be around 25 to 30, and we'll go from there. I was talking about it with John this morning, because Reed Shepard has been simply the topic that everyone wants to discuss. And I said it earlier this week that I don't know that I want to do this like we did with Jalen Green. But what will decide, at least the immediate future for Reed Shepard going forward, is what he does in the playoffs. I don't think they will trade him like they did Jalen Green after he stunk it up in the playoffs. But I do think if Reed Shepard, in a series where teams are scouting him to a point where they attack him in every way that he has deficiencies, and he comes through that shining or at least playing to a competent level, maybe there will be built trust, and then people may get what they want, where they look at him as a guy that maybe best suited for the starting lineup, or at least getting 30 to 35 minutes a night. But I think he may have set in his ways when it comes to that. And Reed Shepard's going to have to prove it, not just the rest of the regular season, but the postseason. But that's kind of this entire Rockets roster. Who other than Kevin Durant is a proven performer? They probably signed Dorian Finney-Smith to be a guy they could count on in the playoffs. We'll see if this regular season is simply him getting acclimated to being out for so long and back, and when there's postseason basketball, he's going to be a guy that you can depend on to contribute. But you've got Kevin Durant, a bunch of dudes who haven't done it at the moment. That doesn't really sync up with we're in for a deep run. They got their nose bloody last year. Maybe they win a first round series this year, but While all the highlights, or at least all the conversation, will be about Reed, I think this entire roster, outside of Kevin Durant, needs to show that they are what people believe them to be. And you know what happens if they don't? Not that the Rockets themselves will care, but all of it's going to follow Ime Udoka. It's already doing that. Another series where they look like they're not ready for it, particularly if they go in like the three, like they have home court advantage, I think the noise on the coach grows. Meanwhile, they're the three seed, and if not for the Spurs and the Thunder being so good, they may be in contention for a two, much like they were last year. So a couple days off, that's nice after the win in Washington, and that helps Jabari Smith get back And we'll get back to Rockets basketball as they got the Warriors. I was looking at because we were talking about it this morning, the setup for the game on ESPN, and they do the players to watch thing. Sean, can you guess who ESPN says the player to watch is for the Warriors? Knowing with how they're built right now, guys out, who's available, who do you think they highlighted as the player to watch?
God. It's not Draymond?
No, it's not Draymond Green.
Al Horford?
Oh, no. That'd be very funny if they did.
Pods.
Yes. Pods, his 12.4 points per game is their player to watch. Meanwhile, Kevin Durant is the Rockets player to watch. That's where they are. I know the history. I know the trauma. But this team stinks. This team, get them out of here. It's on Prime, because Prime, when they scheduled the game, couldn't have known that Jimmy Butler and Steph would not be available. It was like, hey, rematch of last year's playoff series. The aging Warriors, yeah, who still think they got one more in them, versus this young Rockets team led by former Warrior Kevin Durant. Meanwhile, it's Pods versus Kevin Durant.
Even like last week, you're like, oh, Curry will probably be back.
Yeah, he
by
might
then.
Be back.
And then
we
heard like, nope. Actually, and I love it when they go, he's out the next five games.
And then we'll reevaluate.
Yeah, reevaluate the next five.
He's not even back in five. We're going to reevaluate in five. So that's what it is. It's the barely over 500 Warriors versus the Rockets on Thursday night on Prime. So that's where you can watch it. We'll see how that goes. Hopefully it's not very competitive. The Warriors can be scrappy, but not good. So that one should be one where the Rockets can't name their score, but they get out of there with the win. And they playing pretty good basketball as far as win-loss. You may not like it aesthetically, but I think they're now 7-3 in their last 10. So as much as the conversations have been about blowing the big lead against the Knicks and things outside of actual results, 7-3 in their last 10. And the Wolves are playing great, too. They've won four in a row. So it's the Wolves, Nuggets, and Rockets continuing to jostle back and forth for the 3 seed. The Rockets will get their chance to gain some distance from the teams behind them with the Warriors in town. The West is not great, so the Warriors are going to be in the play-in. If only Memphis was better, have a real shot of this team not being in the play-in and really bury them. Because they make the play-in. Don't let Steph get healthy will be the conversation, even though we know there's not a lot there. I just wish Memphis was a little better.
I mean, literally every team beneath the Warriors is like actively trying to tank.
Yeah, the Clippers did their part, even though they're not actively trying, because they don't have their own pick.
I guess they're not actively trying, but they traded away their second and third best player at the deadline.
Yeah, so they're not trying to win.
Yeah, they didn't get better. The competition didn't stiffen.
Yeah, now Benedict Mathurin's playing. Darius Garland made his debut, so we'll see how that goes. But
basically, if you're in the play-in right now,
you're gonna stay there, because like, the Grizzlies aren't catching the Blazers. And if you go to the East, it's kind of the same way. You know, the Hornets are they 15-3 in their last 18? I think that's what I saw, something along those lines, or 15-2. The Hornets still only 31-31 because of how bad they were. But they're the best team in basketball over the last 2 months, at least record-wise.
Yeah, 2 games back of the seventh. 2.5 from missing the play-in all in time.
To getting out of the play-in altogether.
Yeah,
that's how good they've been.
And that's how, you know,
the rest of the East.
It's easy to rise up. Once you get to 500, it's really easy to then become like the 6 seed.
Yeah, once you get there, once you hit that mark, there's a real chance. Just like, throw a couple more games together.
Yeah, Embiid will miss a couple games. The Magic, they're, I guess Franz is hurt, but they're overall just kind of uninspiring. And yeah, you just boop, 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 you're way
right
the
up there. 15-3 in their last 18 games in Charlotte. Kind of remarkable.
Milwaukee is like, damn it! Why can't we need Giannis back so he can make this stupid play?
Yeah, Giannis. Remember, Giannis thrilled because Cam Thomas had a moment or two, and then he reverted back to being Cam Thomas. So the Bucks with Giannis back have now lost 3 in a row. So much like the East and West, much like the West, the East is very much where if you're not in the play-in now, you're probably not going to make it. One thing before we go to break. Do you think Luke Kornet will get booed every time he touches the ball in Atlanta going forward?
Do you think that's possible? They play this year?
I don't know if they've already played that game, if the Spurs have already gone to Atlanta. If you missed it or you don't know, Luke Kornet wrote on his blog that Magic City Night should not happen because we should, at least in his words, be protecting women, not glorifying situations like a strip club where women can be put in dangerous situations. And it was a real two Americas thing. Like, there are people who agree with Luke Kornet, but I think some of it is like, hey, Luke Kornet, stay out of black people business. I think that is part of what's going on here. I'm not sure, but the response to Luke Kornet, he didn't say something very controversial. He said, hey, strip clubs aren't great. That's pretty much what he said. That's all he said, but I think there was a lot of, hey, Luke, this ain't your business. Stay out of it.
Yeah, him being the face of anti-Magic City, it's tough.
Well,
the Spurs don't play Atlanta at all.
So maybe next season, when Luke Kornet makes that trip, we'll see how he's treated.
I think that strains the
Do you think it can last into next season?
The memory that people will have of this?
It probably won't last into next season. It is Luke Kornet.
It is Luke Kornet. Our attention spans are very short when it comes to kind of everything. Just that all the news, it's like, hey, remember what we couldn't stop talking about 3 weeks ago? No, not really. I haven't heard much about it.
So Magic City put it in the spot of being an icon in Atlanta. Of course, we know the stories, Lou Williams, all that stuff, the Wings, all that stuff. But it is, if you think about it, a representative of a certain part of Atlanta. I'm sure non-black people have gone to the Magic City. But when you think about that particular establishment, all the celebrities surrounding it, all the stories surrounding it, it is what you would call an iconic black establishment in Atlanta. And then when Luke Kornet, big old white guy, and this is just
did he go to Duke or does he just look like he went to Duke?
He looks like an offshoot of the Plumlee brothers, but no, he didn't go to Duke. I think he went to Vanderbilt.
Even worse.
At Lexington, Kentucky. I think it's like, Luke, this isn't for you. This isn't one of the things people want to hear you talking about. Although he has every right to. It is his league that he's talking about. But I think it's one of those things where Luke Kornet, you're wading into waters people don't want you wading into.
Again, it's just like the bad messenger. Just like a messenger where there's one really quick
get out of here. F out of here, Luke Kornet. Shut up.
If Steph Curry was weighing in, he might get some.
There might get some. He probably would get some pushback, but might be some traction to Steph Curry saying it. By the way, Al Horford, Atlanta guy, back Luke Kornet. Not Atlanta guy, but he played there. Back Luke Kornet. He was like, well said, Luke. Hey, Al Horford. Beat it, Al Horford. No one's looking for you either, apparently, even though you were one of the better, at least regular season Hawk teams of all time. But
and you're one of my players to watch in Thursday's matchup. Well, you're one of my players to watch.
Yes. How much does Al Horford have left? If he gives Şengün any type of business.
I think Al Horford falls in the category of not as good as he once was, but can be as good once as he ever was, where it's just like there's just one, he can just kind of throw a knuckleball at you for one night.
Yeah, you leave him open for a couple pick and pop threes. Yeah. He can knock some of those down, and that will be frustrating in the middle of a quarter.
He can make it difficult, I think. He can, impede, but he's not going to get, blown off the court. Or, actually, he might get blown off the court. But, if he puts together a strong defensive effort, I won't be like, oh, my God, what's happening? I'll be like, yeah, it's Al Horford. That's what he does. To last year, he was a contributor to a deep a team making deep playoff.
And the Warriors thought he would do that with them.
Yeah,
he was kind of their big offseason acquisition.
This is just Celtics magic, honestly, that Al Horford just stinks every time he doesn't play in Boston.
Yeah, the Sixers signed him
five, 6 years?
Yeah, the Sixers got him because he was giving Embiid so much trouble, so they put him on, he's our answer, and he stunk with the Sixers. They got rid of him as quickly as they could.
Yeah, and then he did some time at OKC.
They tell him to stay home, really?
Yeah.
They're trying to lose.
Just, chilling. And then right back to the Celtics, right back to the finals, probably East Finals and then final. Yeah.
Yes.
This is just, and then the second he leaves, just, he's like, He's like the guy who drank the wrong cup in the Indiana Jones movie. Just immediately turns to dust. Just immediately just skeleton man playing basketball.
As you can tell, we're going everywhere here. Before we'll go to break after this. You mentioned Indiana Jones.
Yes.
I forgot who it was.
Last Crusade.
They said that that movie would end the same way no matter if Indiana Jones was in the movie or not. Because the Nazis do get to the Ark of the Covenant, whatever, which movie?
Oh, yeah.
In that one.
Yeah.
They do get to the Ark
they
of the Covenant.
They get to the, what's it called? I forgot. Holy Grail.
Holy Grail. There it is. They do drink out of the wrong cup.
Yeah. They turned into a skeleton person.
What about, wasn't one where they opened up the Ark and they
their
died?
Face melt is yeah, off. Yeah. I think the first one.
I think it's that one. That no matter if Indiana Jones is in the movie or not, the Nazis get to their final goal and they die anyway.
Yeah, but it the Ark of the Covenant ends up in a warehouse in America. Thank you very much, Dell.
Indiana Jones.
No,
is there.
Last Crusade. Yeah, the place just falls apart. Like wherever that old dude was living. Yeah, I think that guy definitely would have bit it no matter what. Picked the wrong cup. He didn't pick the one that's befitting a carpenter.
Yeah, he picked the bejeweled one, and that was the end of him.
Mm. He chose poorly, as that old guy says.
Didn't read a scripture very well.
No.
Jesus was hanging out with the people, man of the people.
Yeah. Yeah, Nazis weren't exactly the embodiment of Christianity, I'd say.
Despite what they,
despite
they cloaked
what
themselves
they thought.
In. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Surprising. That happens quite a bit. All right, we'll go to break with that, as I said. Everywhere and anywhere in the first segment. Just a palate cleanser. I talked a lot of Texans and CJ Stroud for no other reason than what else will we talk about on a day when there's no actual games to talk about locally. So we'll move from that to this. We've got comments from David Montgomery's ex-teammates. Amon-Ra St. Brown talked about losing his boy. We'll hear from him. He's got a podcast, so he had an avenue to discuss the trade of David Montgomery. So we'll get to that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
The Texans have certainly been busy. There's been some other things the last 24 hours in the NFL. I don't know how Bears fans feel about their offensive line, but when your starting center retires at 27, he was part of an O-line they just rebuilt last offseason. Chris Dahlman says, I'm done at 27 years old. I was trying to find the equivalent here of an important player, not a superstar, but he's a part of what you're doing there and what you want. Like who would it be if Jalen Petrie was like, I'm done with football when we woke up in the morning? He's not Will Anderson. He's not Derek Stingley, but he's very important. Is it Aziz Alshayer? Is that the right comp? If we woke up tomorrow and we found out that Aziz Alshayer decided, you know what, I'm done with football. I don't want to play anymore.
I think it would be he's on his second contract. So it would be like someone who's somewhat older. You know, it's not like whatever. Like the guy out the 49ers a decade ago who just retired after his rookie year. Chris Borland.
Yeah.
Where it's just
he
like,
was good inside. You know what? I won't do this.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Peace out.
Yeah.
I know I could just be Luke Kuechly, but I won't.
I'd rather not.
I think that it's more in that Petrie, Alshayer. They actually don't have that many of those guys that like would like matter or like would actually be like, you know, send shockwaves across the fame. Maybe Dalton Schultz. Dalton Schultz
you're
is
asking
like, I'm
the wrong,
hanging
you're
him
asking
up.
The wrong guy. I mean, Chris Dahlman's their starting center. I think he's of more importance than Dalton Schultz. That's just how I feel. I may be wrong there.
Yeah.
That's why I was trying to think. Good player, important, but not superstar level where I can't believe it. Will Anderson decided he was done. That type. He's not. Chris
Titus
Dahlman's
Howard.
A good.
If Titus Howard was like, I'm done.
He wishes he was Chris Dahlman. So the Bears now have to go find a starting center. So that happened. We know Kyler. Well, if you don't know Kyler Murray, he's been told that if they can't find a trade, which feels unlikely, he'll get released.
Yeah, it also feels like if I'm a team looking to trade for him, I'd be like, well, I just wait till he gets cut.
Yeah.
Negotiate a backroom deal.
If you're the Minnesota Vikings, why, with the offset language, Kyler's going to get his money from the Cardinals. Just pay that man a modest sum.
Yeah.
With the offset language, and now you have your starting quarterback with a roster you think is ready made if only J.J. McCarthy wasn't your starter. And you go from there.
And McCarthy can get another year to sit and learn behind Kyler Murray.
Sure, that's how it'll go.
I mean, honestly.
I know what you're saying, but.
Honestly, maybe there's contract reasons why this can't happen. Could they just call him, be like, McCarthy for Murray, and we'll throw in a fourth?
I don't know why.
We're the bid that you take.
I just don't know why the Cardinals would have any interest. The other LaFleur likes himself some McCarthy.
What else are you doing at quarterback? You know, like
maybe they're planning for 2027. Some people think Malik Willis could be an option there because of the LaFleur connection.
If you're playing for 2027, can I interest you in having JJ McCarthy start for you at quarterback?
Yeah, sure.
How he's and not played. Having the Vikings defense?
No, yeah.
And Justin Jefferson?
But it all depends on what the other LaFleur's approaches. Does he think he can get – he took the job because he thinks it's a roster with a solid quarterback that can go win him some games early? Or is he pointing towards 2027 where there is an arch? Or maybe like a Mensa, whoever the quarterback is that you fall in love with over the course of the 2026 college football season, you're waiting for that guy? Or does he think – just hand me some Malik Willis, and I can go win games or someone else. But it won't be Kyler Murray. He's going to be on the market.
I think some of these teams, like the Cardinals, like the Browns, who consistently find themselves in the bottom tier of the NFLPA rankings that now appear just to be in – like they're not officially coming out, but they still
do
the grades.
They still came out.
And they just feed it to reporters now. And the Cardinals, I think their highest grade was like a B, and it was the head coach who they fired. It was Jonathan Gannon. Was the highest grade that they had. Given the Manning's family history, I would not bank on, what if we just have Arch Manning on our team? Given that they are basically the only guys to ever actually do the, we're not playing for that team. I guess
John Elway also did it. Yeah, but. As far as
recent vintage,
the last 25 years, it's been them and them alone.
Yeah. So I just would be more realistic. I'd be, you know, if I'm the Cardinals, I'd look in the mirror, be like, I have to change. We have to change ourselves before we're ready for Archie Manning to be like, my grandson will play for you.
Yeah. I wonder, you bring it up, if there were teams that the Mannings would exert that type of power again, if they're in the spot to take them. I'm trying to think who those teams would be because.
The
Giants weren't good. That's why they're in a position to take Phillip Rivers.
No,
but they were fine going there, but not San Diego.
The Mariners. Come on,
yeah. I was thinking, is it going to be ownership or is it not? The Bidwells don't have a great reputation in Arizona.
Or is it the
staff in place? How if it became that again? What would be the big reason why a combination?
You know, just don't have an F. In one of those places, don't be terrible at one of those. Shout out to Spanos,
the Chargers
owner back then. So yeah, I think for most prospects, like when they did try to get this off with Caleb Williams, 2 years ago now, I was like, all right, guys, like no one actually does this except for one. One people actually do this. Now, Arch Manning be good enough to be the number one pick and be able to exert this kind of power the way that his uncle was? I don't know.
Don't know. Tom Coughlin was the coach at the time. So they had Maros, had Ernie Accorsi, Tom Coughlin. Those were names that people respected back then. So the Mannings were happy to go there. And, of course, it worked out for him. And Phil Rivers was fine in San Diego.
Yeah, it kind of worked out for everybody. Yeah,
it worked out for everybody. Lesser so for the Chargers because they're the Chargers.
Yeah, I was going to say it worked out the worst for Phil Rivers because he's like, I could have just had my career in New York and maybe have won.
Would he have liked playing in New York, though?
No, he would have hated it.
Yeah.
But he might have won a Super Bowl. Might have snuck one of those. Super Bowls maybe, that Eli Manning did.
Maybe his wobbler doesn't get to David Tyree.
I don't know.
Who knows? Maybe he doesn't get out of that potential sack. Who knows? Sliding doors and all that stuff. Let's get to a guy who will be a Texan. Well, at least let's get to one of his teammates. Amon-Ra St. Brown, great wide receiver, big time in Detroit. Also has a podcast. Of course he does. But this is him on his former teammate, David Montgomery.
David Montgomery got traded to the Texans for a fourth-round pick and seventh-round pick and O-line, Juice Shrugs. So how do you feel about that? I know, like, I know him as a player and as a friend. He's a good, great teammate, great player, great running back. And it's kind of a loss for you guys, but you guys got some picks and got O-line. How do you feel about it?
You know, I'm sick. Selfishly, I'm sick because I love Demo. One of my favorite teammates. I feel like he was, no matter what the situation was, we all knew that, you know, he wanted more carries and wanted to play more. He never, you know, never made it about himself. He was always, you know, all about the team, which I know is hard sometimes, and especially in his position. Like, he's an RB1 on 31 other teams. So, I mean, he's damn near RB1 for us, but it's like you got two guys, two really good running backs, only one running back can play, which kind of sucks. I was thinking about it, like, it's almost like a quarterback situation. Like, although running backs do rotate, like, only one running back plays. Whereas receiver, you can have two or three on the field. But anyways, yes, selfishly, like I said, I'm upset. But also, I'm really happy for Demo because I know how much, you know, he wanted to have a bigger role on an offense. And I think he's going to get that in Houston. They got a crazy defense. They got, you know, receivers. They got a good quarterback. They got a good team. So I think he's going to a good team.
Thank you, Amon-Ra.
They have a receiver.
Well, he also said,
I guess they have receivers.
Yeah, I mean, he is correct, and there are more than one receiver on the team. He also said that David Montgomery can start for 31 other teams.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't start for Philly.
No.
He couldn't start for Atlanta. He couldn't start for Miami.
Baltimore.
Yeah, so, of course, high praise for his guy. And this is the second time the Texans have been able to take advantage of a back who wanted a different role. Joe Mixon didn't particularly like his role in Cincinnati because they became more of a shotgun run team, because that's what Joe Burrow likes to operate out of. So he wanted to play big boy football. I believe that was one of the things he said. And the Texans were going to be under center more, so he wanted that. We hear Amon-Ra St. Brown talk about David Montgomery as a guy who wanted a bigger role. When Jahmyr Gibbs is your other guy, you are going to get less carries. Now, Chris Long, we played the clip this morning. Chris Long talked about the less carries the last couple years being a benefit, because while David Montgomery is 29 years old, or he will be, he doesn't have the carries of a 29-year-old back because they've been limited due to Jahmyr Gibbs and his explosion as the kind of the featured back in the run in the pass game for the Lions. So maybe we get a fresher David Montgomery than we thought we were getting because of that. He also talked about how the Patriots did this with an older back and Corey Dillon. I think the better point is talking about the lack of carries the last couple of years, as opposed to referencing something that happened over 20 years ago, particularly when the Patriots got it done. The Patriots and what they do should never be applied to anyone else, particularly the Texans. They've tried that before, and it didn't work out the way that they wanted to. So the better example, the better thing he brought up, is the lack of carries the last couple years. The other thing you could say is they just did this with Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon, older back at the time, not as old as David Montgomery, but a guy who had carries on him, and it worked out for them when they got a guy out of a situation that he didn't want to be in. So if we get a Joe Mixon type of year from David Montgomery, even if it's for the 1 year, that's a clear win, even if you're giving up a fourth-round pick. And it's clear that Amon-Ra St. Brown and his brother, Equanimeous, don't know anything about Juice Scruggs other than he plays O-line, which is right.
And that he was involved in this trade.
Yes, they know that. You got O-line. Yes, you got an O-lineman. That's true.
Correct. You did get an offensive lineman. Yeah, I do think that's the thing with the 29-year-old running back. It's a good point that they're not all created equal. They're not all DeMarco Murray getting 350 rush attempts. Like,
true.
Yeah, that guy was going to fall off a cliff. But ultimately, we'll see. I mean, the Mixon comparison's interesting, but you did end up paying more, like draft capital-wise, not salary cap-wise. You do end up trading more for Montgomery than you did for Mixon.
Who was a younger player at the time.
Yes, and he was also, It was, what, like a sixth or seventh round pick that was basically, hey, we want to cut the line on
him
when
being
this guy
on the
gets
open
cut.
Market, yeah.
Yeah. The difference, though, or one of the differences, is also that, like, Mixon was a better running back prior to becoming a Texan, so
that's true.
There's a lot of different things, you know, stacking up. But if you, at the end of the day, you just get Joe Mixon production on the 2026 Houston Texans from Dave Montgomery, then yeah, it's a win. It's just it's not like the perfect comp that it feels like, but it is the closest thing that definitely this team has, and the closest thing a lot of teams have. Like, there's not that many, you know, 29-year-old or 28-year-old running backs that get traded to start for a different team that aren't Saquon Barkley, you know, that aren't Derrick Henry, which are huge outliers in the other way.
And I'll correct one thing. Joe Mixon was 28 when he joined the Texans.
Okay.
So it's not much different. Dave Montgomery will turn 29 in June, so he'll play his age 29 season with the Texans. Only a year difference between the two.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would just guess off of knowing their careers that Mixon had maybe not way more carries, but had a considerable amount of carries more than Montgomery has had.
So
just by the fact that he was a three down back for Cincinnati and Montgomery was splitting time with Gibbs.
So David Montgomery started his career with Chicago, where he was their guy. Coming off of the 2025 season, he has had 1,477 carries. Joe Mixon, after the 2024 year, of course, didn't play in 2025, has 1,816 with 245 carries in 2024. So Mixon was about 150 more carries.
Like a half season.
Yeah, half season more, about eight games more on the tires than one Dave Montgomery. Joe Mixon did miss quite a bit of time in 2020, so that makes up that leads to why his carries are a little closer. He would have many more if not for that. So they're relatively even as far as when they are required age-wise and how many carries are on those legs. Joe Mixon, as you mentioned, a guy was used out of the backfield quite a bit with the Bengals. David Montgomery less so by the Bears and the Lions. So either way, they got a good NFL back. Now they need to help David Montgomery and C.J. Stroud with what they do with the O-line. All right, we'll go to break with that. You can call us 713-780-3776. We're going to talk about, well, when we come back, I want to discuss maybe the best home field advantage in sports I didn't know existed until I saw some clips on the internet. We'll get to that when we come back.
ESPN.
It's the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 97.9 HD2.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
The number is 713-780-3776. We had a pretty lengthy discussion about March Madness on the morning show. Getting ever closer. We got the Big 12 tournament coming up here soon. And of course, we talked about the Cougs for the first time since they've joined the Big 12, not winning the conference. That goes to Arizona. But what are we, a couple weeks away, less so, from Bracket Madness? You can get ready with us. Bracket Madness is coming soon. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Golden Nugget Lake Charles, and our supporting sponsors, Two Creeks Crossing Resort and Republic Boot Company. So, just about there. It's March. The tournament's nearly here. We're going to certainly do the bracket thing one more time. You got great home environments in college basketball. Of course, Cameron Indoor. We know Kansas, they don't lose at home on Mondays with Bill Self when it's Big Monday. So you're great environments everywhere across all sports. I don't know that I've ever heard a place like this for an exhibition game. This is the DR. They're doing their Santo Domingo exhibition as they get ready for the World Baseball Classic. It's Juan Soto at the plate. They're playing the Tigers. Listen to the reaction after Juan Soto hits a home run.
The middle of short. And the 0-1 is drilled to right. Back on it, Perez. Looking up, and it's out of here.
The visual helps, too, as you're watching the crowd go crazy. This is an exhibition game against probably a pitcher they've never heard of. And they're losing their minds. I watched that clip and thought to myself, who the hell is beating the DR in that building? You can rank this, particularly if you see the video, against any home environment in pro sports, college sports, and you'd be like, you know what? You ain't got nothing on the DR. For an exhibition game, that's the part that you got to take into account. They're playing a shell of what the Detroit Tigers are going to be this year.
Yeah, they're playing like Detroit Tigers double-A guys.
And it doesn't matter. Look, Juan Soto hits a home run that, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't matter to anybody.
It'll be lost to time.
It'll be lost. And this is how that fan base is reacting to watching their guys and their colors have some success. Jeremy Pena had an opposite field. I don't know if it wound up being a double or a triple. He drove it in. The crowd got crazy, too. I don't – look, it's baseball. It's baseball. Pitcher could shut them down, whatever. We all get it. Momentum's as good as the next day starting pitcher. I don't know how you walk into that place and win a game. Not the way that crowd reacts to everything.
No. No one goes into Santo Domingo and comes out alive.
Well, it's not Tiger Stadium, isn't it? Or no, is it the only Gators get out alive of the swamp, which clearly isn't true. Unless you're a Longhorn.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, it happened. Some teams didn't get out alive, but if you're a USF Bull, you get out alive.
Yeah, it doesn't work in the opposite. It works in the opposite.
Yeah, so I'm going to watch World Baseball Classic games exclusively in Santo Domingo.
Yeah? Are they one of the...
I think they're one of the hosts.
Hosts?
I do think they're one of the hosts. We got games here at Daikin.
Yeah.
Whatever. It ain't going to reach Santo Domingo levels.
I think one of them is going to be the either Scooble or Skeens, like, one night only on Team USA event that they're doing, where these guys are good enough to pitch for the for America in, like, pool play, but not the tournament, not the single elimination, where it's like, no, I want those guys.
Yeah, can you hold off?
In the semifinals.
I got to correct it. Unfortunately, no games in Santo Domingo. They're in Puerto Rico, Houston, Miami, and Tokyo. So this is just as the team gets ready to compete, they're playing games
there. The send-off friendly kind.
Yeah, so unfortunately, we won't, at least I won't get a chance to watch that crowd react to games that matter, but they'll travel. Probably to Miami and Puerto Rico. I don't know exactly what the schedule is. But I was hoping to send insert team who isn't as good as the DR to that building for a game that matters. Send the Netherlands.
Great Britain going
Send Great Britain to the DR for a World Baseball Classic game. Not going to happen. Puerto Rico is one of the host countries. Or actually, proper. What do we call Puerto Rico?
Territory?
Is that what they are? Country, territory. Well, that is one of the places, along with Daikin. Daikin will get World Baseball Classic games.
There we go.
And we'll get the U.S. in town.
Yeah, yeah. I don't love that Scooble and Skeens are only doing... I think Scooble's doing one, Skeens is doing two starts. I don't know. If I'm Paul Skeens, I'm like, oh my God, what if the Pittsburgh Pirates season gets ruined?
See,
like,
this like, is
oh,
the thing.
Oh my God.
I was having the talk with John. Okay, pitchers, arms, trouble,
delicate.
you're afraid. Get it. But if you're an everyday player, at most you play seven games. Like, that's how it plays out if you get to the final. Yeah. You play seven. So you're so fearful of that as opposed to what the two games a week you're going to play in spring training. I get it. You're only going to play the three innings or so, if that. And you got to play the entire thing. But this is what we're doing. We're so afraid of potentially having to play seven games and the injury concerns. I know Altuve got hurt. I get it, but that could have happened.
Yeah, you could get hit by pitch and BP.
Yeah, yeah.
With,
so why play him?
Double A guys.
I guess you consider seeing live batting, live pitching in spring more important, and you have to do that, and you don't have to participate in the World Baseball Classic. So if you're going to choose one, I'll choose the threat of getting hurt in spring training as opposed to playing in the World Baseball Classic.
At least
because one of them is somewhat mandatory.
At least he's getting hurt in my uniform is basically what it comes
down
to.
That's kind of what it is.
It's like, because yes, you could get hurt. Like the, even if they play two games a week, well, they practice every day. Like they're out in the field, maybe not every day, but like 6 days a week. They're doing something.
They're doing live batting practice, doing all that stuff, even when we don't see them.
Especially in baseball. You can get hurt doing anything in baseball.
Well, the Astros certainly proved. Spencer Arrigetti got hurt warming up in the outfield.
Like, I don't know. It seems like, if you just follow this to the logical conclusion, you should basically just never play baseball except for 162.
Except the games where the lights are on and people are watching.
Regular season playoffs?
Yeah.
Like, any other time, you're risking the bottom line for the MLB. God forbid. And never mind that this is a tournament that's like run by MLB.
Yeah.
Like this is
MLB, also MLB wants this thing. They want their stars in it, but the teams themselves are protecting their stars. Oh, well, some of them. Like Jeremy Pena can go play. Jeremy Pena can subject himself to a potential injury. Shea Whitcomb can play for Korea.
Yeah.
And other Astros, but guys like Correa who would love to represent his country. Of course, Altuve, let it be known, he'd love to do it. No. Is Yiner's playing?
No, he's not.
No, yeah, right.
He's
he didn't get the insurance or whatever reason for him. It is weird that it's picking and choosing.
Mm-hmm.
I get it.
I hope it doesn't rip the clubhouse.
Guys got to go play and others didn't.
Everyone hates Shea Whitcomb.
Yeah, we went through this. Correa actually has been relatively healthy since he left Houston. But the concern understood. Older player in regards to him being around for so long.
Can't have him playing.
Can't have him out there playing, but
6 or 7.
Maybe.
Maybe.
If things go completely well.
If they make the final.
Yeah, he plays 7 games over the course of, what, 2 weeks or
something?
Yeah,
never mind that I could sit him for one. Like
he doesn't have to play in all of them, too.
I will say, I did kind of, as I was thinking about how MLB runs this tournament, is a little smart if they are like, no, all the good hitters can play. Not the pitchers. Just let's get some runs. Let's get some runs on the board.
You going to do the chicks dig the long ball thing?
Santo Domingo seemed to love
It wasn't just the chicks. Everybody in that building loved Juan Soto hitting home runs.
Some Tigers pitcher I've never heard of.
Yeah. I was looking. I was like, that's the thing that struck me. That Tiger pitcher, whatever. This is an exhibition.
Yeah. Like Rocky IV. It was only supposed to be an exhibition.
If he dies, he dies. And that's what they were saying to the Tigers. They die, they die.
If whatever, Rafael Montero dies, he dies? I don't know if Montero's...
Did he make a roster?
Was he pitching? Is he still on the Tigers? I know he was on them last year.
Yeah, I don't know that he made an appearance because I wasn't paying that much attention. I just know I love a crowd who can celebrate a home run that, as you said, when it comes down to it...
There will not be anywhere on the internet other than this video where there's not going to be a stat page for WBC exhibition games,
but it'll be a memory that they'll always have. And they will travel well. We can expect that as well, whether it be in Puerto Rico or Miami, wherever their games are. It can be found. I'm just not looking it up. We'll go to break with that. We'll get into hour two. We will hear from Russell Wilson. He responded to Sean Payton's criticism through a tweet. And then he joined a podcast to voice his opinion and explain why he did it. So Russell Wilson, one of those guys people think may be playing himself out of the Hall of Fame because of the last 4 seasons or so. I don't know that Sean Payton's helping that any by either directly attacking him or doing it in a way where all you have to do is draw a couple of lines and you know he's talking about Russell Wilson. Either way, we'll hear from him. We heard from Bob Costas early. We'll hear from him again in a moment that he will hope doesn't endure. I'm sure he loves that he got to do the throwback game with him and Doug Collins and Mike Fratello. He's probably not going to enjoy the clip that people grab of him talking to Jim Gray, who was another guy they brought back. So we'll get to that in the second hour. 713-780-3776 is the number. We'll get to hour two when we come back.
ESPN 97.5. Spring is calling at Two Creeks Crossing Resort, just 90 minutes north of Houston. Spend the day relaxing by the water, then stick around for live music, great food, and can't-miss events happening all season long. From cook-offs and holiday celebrations to outdoor adventures,